In 2010, my family was able to celebrate the centennial anniversary of our Adirondack camp house in New York State. And this was a house that for 100 years, six generations of my family had come to enjoy as a refuge from New York City. Had a lot of good times there. In 2010, September of that year, my father died at the house. And that caused me to consider what its significance was for me, for my family, and what the future might hold. In 1910, my great-great-grandfather bought a parcel of land in the Adirondack Mountains of New York State, sight unseen, and he had a house built without much input or supervision. And what resulted was a traditional wood cabin with five tiny bedrooms, a great stone fireplace, a porch that wrapped three quarters of the way around the house, and no kitchen. 100 years later, we do have a kitchen, but the house has remained largely the same. It's not insulated. It's only available to us during the summer months. You can hear everything from the five bedrooms, so late night secret sharing is not encouraged, but it has happened repeatedly over the past century. The house also, because it's wood, responds to the difference in temperature throughout the day, so it makes a lot of noise expanding and contracting, and I love that about the house. The most interesting part of the house to me is that it is owner to about 15 guest books that document its history. Starting in 1910, the guests just sign their name in really large cursive and their address. And that's not really helpful if you want to know what they did back then and had fun. But the later guest books are a record of the unending stream of good times that people have had there. Some owner woes like the looming taxes, the infestation of beavers at the dock in the 1980s, how the horses did at Saratoga for any given season, what the temperature was on any given day in August for about three decades, thanks to my Uncle Buddy. And ultimately, it documents the evolution of my family, the marriages, the births, the divorces, and the lost teeth. The camp went through a couple periods of abandonment, and those also are documented in these guest books by the absence of entries. But over a few winters in the 1960s and 70s, we had an interloper stay at the house during the winter, and he, of course, read the guest books. And he penned his own entries for those winters that he stayed there, commenting on my family, and he thought we were fun. But he was squatting, and he just wanted to leave his mark. The guest books are evidence that life is cyclical. For the past couple of summers, my daughters have dutifully put in their entries that they loved making s'mores, swimming in the lake, going on boat rides, and fishing with their uncle. And if you go back to 1978 and open up the book, you'll find me at the same age writing the exact same thing. By the 1980s, the house had fallen into disrepair. And my uncle, who was the owner at the time, was just keeping it going. And if you own a home, you know that they are a money pit. A vacation home is a money abyss, and there wasn't any money really to take care of it. So my father, not wanting to see this house leave the family, took it over. And he wasn't the first owner to love the house, but he was certainly the first one to make it a home. He wanted the place to be shared and a place where you could come and have fun. When my father took over the house, my family and I really watched him evolve. Because at his home in New York City, he was never one to tinker or fix things or initiate home improvement projects. But up at the camp house, this was what he dedicated himself to doing entirely, and it made him happy. So when he first took over the house, I remember he spent the summer on the roof. And in September, he hired two men to come and replace the roof that he had attempted to replace. For the entire summer. But he had spent the entire summer on the roof, not on the porch where he should have been enjoying himself, but he was happy. Every Memorial Day would roll around and my father would run up to the mountains and uncover furniture, turn on the electricity and the water, deal with colonies of dead flies, mothballs, and mouse traps, and basically look forward to the promise of yet another good summer to come. So my father knew that he was going to die, which in retrospect I've realized is a privilege, because it allowed us to put him where he wanted to be, and that was at the house, and it allowed us to gather there to be with him. And I looked at the house in a very different way, because my father was different in it. The distance between his favorite porch chair and the fireplace was like a marathon. And every time he took a step up, I felt like that step had become a mountain. But the house really served us well in those last weeks. It was a place where we were very familiar. It was very soothing. My father got to look at the trees, and those were a diversion. We also did the things in the house that made him happy. We mowed the lawn, we played darts, and we painted a couple of windows. In those last weeks that my father was at the house and he had us gathered, he announced that he had created a trust to take care of the house. And this is the part of the story where I tell you, I never really liked this house. I am a city girl. The sound of an ambulance tearing up Calvert Street is soothing to me. Not owls and evergreen trees. But my love of this house is really hard won. And it's inextricably linked to my admiration for the man who preserved it for us. And it's my father's legacy that we have the possibility of another 100 years.